Hello and welcome to Condensed Histories with me, Greg Chapman.
And me, Jem Deducci.
Okay, Jim, gloves are off. We are going to... Actually, gloves are not off. We got our gloves safely in place, but only in times when it's socially appropriate to wear gloves. We're being careful. We're using them correctly. But either way, the point is, Jim, it's an argument episode. So what possible argument are you going to bring up to us today?
Is Winston Churchill overrated?
Yes, he is. And that is another argument episode.
That's less than a minute of podcasting time there, ladies and gentlemen. Job done. I respectfully disagree with you, sir. So I came up with this one, but I think one of the important things about these sort of argument episodes is sometimes Greg and I do genuinely see things differently, but we don't sort of go out to kill each other or, you know, just get abusive. And there's just too much of that on social media. And I think, at the moment when we're not interacting with each other physically as much, I felt that social media, it's always got a nasty edge, but it's hurt me a little bit more than it would do under normal circumstances. So please, everybody, try and be kind. And you're about to see two grown-ups having a disagreement, but not necessarily burn each other's houses down, okay? So, Greg, your initial thoughts.
Yeah, my initial thought is I've just got to send a quick test message to stop the arson team from going round to your house. And once we've stopped your house being burnt down... My initial thoughts are that I like the way you phrase this question, because when you sent it to me over on messages, you said, is Winston Churchill overrated? And then just before the podcast started, a little bit of behind the scenes gossip here, just before the podcast started, you said to me, how exactly did I want to phrase this? And I want the phrasing, is Winston Churchill overrated? Because here's the thing. In 2002, the BBC, those of you who remember it, the BBC did this massive poll with all sorts of rounds and qualifications and eliminations and all that to try and find the greatest Briton. And that BBC Two poll ended up with the greatest Briton of all time being Winston Churchill. That is the greatest Briton of all of history. So, Jim, all you have to do to prove that Winston Churchill is not overrated is prove to me that he was the greatest Briton of all time. And as far as I can see it, as long as I can cast a shadow of doubt on the fact that he was the greatest Briton of all time, then I have won the argument and I can stand here and say that he has been slightly overrated. How do you take that?
It's an interesting concept, Greg. I think that there is actually some merit to what you're saying, but this is where we get to how do you do these comparisons. I think if you're going to have the greatest Briton of all time, first of all, you can take out anybody who's royal, because they didn't exactly earn their position. They might have done a good job running the country, while they were there, but maybe somebody would have been better. It's just they happened to be born in the right place at the right time, kind of thing. And then once you get stripped that away, you're then into the worlds of sort of politics, arts, and war, or, military, martial, whatever you want to call it. And, weirdly, Churchill actually covers all three of those areas, and nobody else really does. He was a major player. He was obviously Prime Minister in World War II, or at least for part of it, but he was also a major player in World War I, and he is the only major player of both world wars to have written a history of those world wars, which, obviously, they're biased. He is also one of the most quotable Britons of all time. History shall be kind to me, for I intend to write it, and he did indeed do that. But even in 500 years' time, people will be going back to Churchill's histories of World War I, World War II, because that's somebody who knows what they're talking about, and it'll be an original source, Caesar's Gallic Wars and things like that. It will be in the same category. And indeed, he's the only Prime Minister who's ever won the Nobel Prize for Literature. So, yeah, he is an important person in the world of literature. He is an important person in the world of politics. And in terms of military, he was involved in the charge at Omdurman, which was the last cavalry charge of the British Army. He was also, obviously, a leader during World War II. He made horrific mistakes in World War I with Gallipoli, and then resigned his post and joined the trenches. How many leaders admit to doing something wrong and then deliberately put themselves in harm's way in the war that they're a part of? And then by the end of his career, he's talking about he coined the term Iron Curtain, with the end of World War II, and was talking about nuclear war. This is a man who was involved in a cavalry charge in Imperial Britain, or Imperial British Army. They're actually in the Sudan, going all the way to nuclear war. His time is a remarkable time on this planet, and he was sort of at the forefront of it for a surprising amount of time. That's my opening salvos. Over to you.
My first issue with all of that is the Second World War. I'm gonna start there. I'm gonna ignore for a second that you tried to gloss over Gallipoli in a sentence and move on. We can come back to that a little bit later. But the big thing, I think, if you speak to people about Winston Churchill who are not historians, the big thing is the Second World War and everything he did in the Second World War and the fact that we ultimately won the Second World War. And here's one of those little Twitter things, modern day parallel things that has been winding me up over the last week or so. And that is I've started to pop, I don't know if you've seen it popping up on your social media. I've generally tried to avoid too much of the sort of current news going on. But one of the things I found a bit fascinating is how New Zealand is handling the current outbreak. And they've done very, very well. But one of the things that really annoyed me is I've started to see an awful lot of... Well, first of all, I start to see a lot of people using the current situation for political gain, which annoys me.
And yes, I've been trying to avoid that as well.
But what a lot of them have been using is speeches of Jacinda Ardern, the New Zealand Prime Minister. And she does seem to be absolutely wonderful. The way she's handling everything seems to be going in the right direction. But they've been using that to compare and contrast with the British government and the way we've handled things. And they're using a whole load of statistics. And by almost any statistic you measure, New Zealand has done so much better than Great Britain in dealing with the outbreak. The statistic that not one of those articles seems to mention is the simple fact that she is Prime Minister of a country that has, I believe, a population of less than London in an area bigger than the entire United Kingdom. People are more spread out. It's an entirely different situation. And so you're not comparing like with like. And that got me thinking, well, she's being lauded as having beaten the virus because so many other countries haven't managed it. But she does have an easier job than a lot of countries because of the spread of people. And then we come back to Churchill. And Churchill, really, you look him up, he was the war prime minister. That's basically what he's known for. And the victories and all of the salute and his funny little comments and all of these different things. But it all comes back to the fact that we won the war. And Churchill is the greatest Briton. And I think he would not, I don't think there's any chance he would have won a greatest Briton poll had he not been the prime minister who won the war. But he didn't win the war. The war was won by huge, complex machinery, lots of different countries involved. Even right up to very close to the end of the war, it was still questionable which way it was going to go. And I think that is my problem with Churchill being overrated, is he kind of gets credit for the Second World War, for winning the Second World War. And yes, some of his strategic planning did come into play. Yes, he was one of the first people that sort of saw the rise of Nazism and saw Hitler as the scale of problem he was to become. But at the same time, you have to look at it and say, yeah, but without that Second World War, but that was not all his doing. He was not the winner of the Second World War. He made some speeches. He did a lot of strategic planning. He was a good military leader, but did that make him as great as they say? And I think that is the thing. I think he is lucky in a position of history of having been the prime minister and a charismatic prime minister at a time when the country needed somebody to rally behind. And also at a point in history where there was an awful lot of propaganda going into the papers, and the way papers worked and the things that papers reported were, I think, very, very much controlled. And so I think he actually also had that funneling through as well. So I think that is one of my biggest issues with looking at him as, and I'm, and like I say, all these arguments, we know they're more nuanced than they are. But my big issue with him is everybody looks at him and the thing he is held up, the reason I think he won the Greatest Britain is because we won the war. And it's more people thinking it's great that we won the Second World War and defeated the Nazis and ended things like the Holocaust, and less about the fact that actually people were looking at the history and the background and weighing up whether the fact that we won the Second World War outweighs the tragedy of Gallipoli, and weighing up on all the different things, and is he that great a Briton? I think it was really just a case of we won the war, he was Prime Minister at the time, and that is what gets him over the line, and that's what pushes him to that level, and that is why I think he is overrated.
Okay. So, weirdly, I'm going to agree with you that it irritates me when I hear Britain saying, we won the war. No, we're on the winning side. There is a difference to that. By far, the most casualties on the Allied side of World War II was the Soviet Union. And indeed, at any one point after the invasion of the Soviet Union, two-thirds of the German and Wehrmacht armies were on the Eastern Front, not the Western Front. So without the colossal loss of life, some of it completely avoidable by Joseph Stalin, we would have lost the war. There's no doubt about that. But what I will say is, I think it's a little unfair to say, he didn't win it on his own. True, but nobody wins a war on their own. And the critical thing was that, up until 1940, almost the first year of the war was under Neville Chamberlain. So basically he comes in as basically Dunkirk is happening. The British forces, the British Expeditionary Force is collapsing. It was, the plan was basically let's do World War One again. Let's stop the Germans in sort of like on the edges of Belgium, hold up a line and then push them back. That didn't happen. And so he starts his premiership with one of the most ridiculous collapses of British military power in our history. And, and you're right that it's somehow spun into this mass retreat of 300,000 men as somehow a victory. But hey, saving those lives was important. But the point there, at that point, most people would have said, our plan was to fight on the continent. We can't anymore. Let's surrender. The Germans even said, look, we want Europe. You can have your empire. And we'll just leave it at that. And that sounded like a pretty good deal in 1940, but, Churchill made the comparison about, appeasing Hitler's a bit like trying to appease an alligator and or crocodile. It's just who do they eat last? And so it was the fact that he was bloody-minded. And it is worth remembering that he wasn't Prime Minister right at the end of the war, because he ran an election in June 1945 and he lost to Clement Attlee, the Labour leader, because people did recognise that he was a great war leader, but he wasn't necessarily the man for peace. And everybody wanted to rebuild, and everybody felt that the war was winding down by then. I mean, we still had a couple of months to go in the Far East. But yes, the clear and present danger to Britain was no longer there. So, yeah, his policies saved our bacon in World War II. Because had Neville Chamberlain been there, or had perhaps a slightly less pugnacious Prime Minister been there, Halifax was very nearly Prime Minister instead of Churchill. Churchill was seen as a kind of an old war dog. Somebody else might well have ended up suing for peace with Hitler. So, his strategy was important. You also then talked about Gallipoli. Gallipoli was a colossal mess. But the overall plan and strategy wasn't. You can't blame somebody for coming up with a plan and then somebody else botches the execution of the plan. But landing in the Dardanelles, which was very close to Constantinople, could have knocked out a major ally of Germany in World War One. Now, we only know with hindsight it didn't work. And indeed, when the loss of life was horrific, Churchill resigned his post apologised and then joined the front lines. And I can't think of any other moment in history where a politician was that sorry about their failings.
I can't help feeling that you have argued two sides of the same coin there, though, because on the subject of the Second World War, you said that it was clearly Churchill's policies that saved the war. And then in the second one, when we talk about the First World War and Gallipoli, you then said, well, you can't hold the person whose policies are accountable. And I would throw that back and say, well, he came up with the strategy and everything else. I think if you are at the top, and he obviously felt that he was responsible for it, otherwise he wouldn't resign. And then in the Second World War, it was more than just Churchill's leadership. It was absolutely everything. I mean, you've got Bletchley Park going on. You've got the code breakers. If we hadn't broken crucial codes at certain times, if we hadn't been lucky, if we hadn't got the Enigma machines when we did for the Bletchley Park operatives to work on, that would have lengthened the war. If these spy networks hadn't done their jobs, and then of course, if we hadn't had the equipment and everything else, there were so many things. If Pearl Harbor hadn't happened, I think our chances of winning the Second World War go massively downhill. I think if any of these other things hadn't taken place, if any of these other people hadn't been there, and like you said, you can't put somebody, like you said, nobody wins a war by themselves. And that is exactly what my issue is here. Because I was very clear at the beginning, the argument I want to have is about whether or not Churchill is overrated. And there is that whole thing of, my issue is that he is almost treated, looking through, just sort of scanning through the internet, things we talk about, the reasons behind people's voting and the fact he was voted with that Greatest Britain thing. It is almost as though people are putting him single-handedly, not as a person, but as a figurehead. He suddenly became almost, I think he became, for the period of the war, he became John Bull. He became that mythical English figure, the Britannia, as it were. And he is. It's like the entire war effort is humanized in him. And I think in that way, as a symbol of all of that, it is fantastic. But I think to take that and then just say that is Churchill the person is where I have a problem. That is where I think he is overrated. I think he is overrated because he is looked at as that symbol. Now, I don't disagree with holding Churchill up as a symbol of the war effort and everything that was done, but I do think that that does make him overrated because it does make him about, and at the same time, not only overrated, but also I think does him a disservice because it also makes him as a historical figure slightly two-dimensional because very rarely do people who are holding him up as the Greatest Britain go into Gallipoli and a lot of them possibly wouldn't know about Gallipoli and other things that happened in his past. So I think that is my issue with him being overrated. It's not to say he wasn't the right leader for the war, and it's not to say he didn't handle the war well, and it's not even to say that I disagree with obviously Gallipoli was a mess, but like you say, it does take a bold man, somebody of principles, to respond to that by saying, right, well, I'm going to go actually into the trenches back with the people. But I still think that he is overrated on the basis that all of this is just pushed through into him, including some of his great speeches. And it was an interesting book, you know, because we get all these great speeches. I mean, even the film about Churchill, His Darkest Hour, had to make up a moment on a train to try. You know, that, even that film, I couldn't believe that film felt the need to make up part of Churchill's story to actually make him seem bit better. I couldn't even understand why that had to be done in that particular film.
Well, it was to make it more relevant because fundamentally, rightly or wrongly, the story of Churchill in World War II is him being surrounded by white middle-aged men. And therefore, you know, there's nothing in it for the women. There's nothing in it for the... And I thought, you see, I would argue in a weird way. So like, hold my beer for a moment, Greg, as I jump onto your side. I think you're being sort of kind of nice to him because what I'm seeing increasingly online is as people come from other parts of the British Empire and, you know, have been raised in Britain, you know, with different cultures, they attack him in very different ways. You know, Churchill's on record as referring to Gandhi as a dangerous man. Because from Churchill's point of view, he was. This is a man who wanted to break up the British Empire, you know, make India independent, which we can all agree is a good thing. But from Churchill's point of view, that was a bad thing. But that does very much put him in the past with his points of view. And the other thing that happened in India, and this is the one that always annoys me, is one of the nastiest, most lethal famines that has sort of ever struck in the world was the Bengal famine. It killed, I think the estimation is about 5 million people, okay? And, you know, Churchill was in charge, and Churchill didn't do anything about it. And that is right. But the problem with that argument, it was in 1943. It's almost like there was a world war going on and he had bigger fish to fry. I would assume, being blunt about it, he thought this is an Indian problem. Let the local authorities try and mitigate it. I have to worry about, you know, a Nazi invasion and things like that. And I think this is where people start cherry picking their history and assume that, you know, I don't like this person. Can I find something that proves that he's unlikable? Oh, there it is. Because every person in history is a human being, and there's good things and bad things about him. He drank too much, but as he once pithily said, I got more out of the alcohol than the alcohol got out of me. Also, there's the famous one with the woman, which, I mean, this is the thing. A lot of people in history aren't particularly amusing. He came in and he sort of annoyed this woman, and she said, sir, if you were my husband, I'd put poison in your tea. And his response is, madam, if I was your husband, I'd drink it. And the other one is, you, sir, are drunk, and you, madam, are ugly, but in the morning I'll be sober. I think these are pretty good lines off the top of your head that we know he said. So he did do the, you know, when you're saying he's overrated, I could be a bit flippant and say, compared to who? Because he delivered the goods. You know, he was involved in two of the biggest wars in history. He was on the winning side of both of them. He wrote essential histories around them. He was a good public speaker. He was eloquent. He was loving to his wife. Does he have a bad side, dark side? Absolutely. He seemed to have dealt with depression, which is one of the reasons why he drank, but he kept going through all that. Whereas I think nowadays it would be more a case of, he just needs to be left alone and da 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 da. And it's like, no, he just got on with it. You know, the Blitz spirit literally was embodied by this man. If people turned, you're saying he's overrated. I'm dying to know somebody who's, you know, that well regarded in literature, that well regarded in politics, and that well regarded in terms of, you know, military stuff. And I think you're going to struggle to get somebody like that.
But the trouble is, that is why I deliberately didn't want to, you know, sort of go down different versions of this question, because I think you're right. I think you'd struggle to find somebody that's well regarded in all those different things. But the question wasn't, was he the best at those particular things? The question was, is he overrated? And overrated isn't a comparison to somebody else. The overrated is, in that particular field, overrated is he as good as his propaganda, his hype? Does he live up to his hype? And I think the answer is, no, frankly. I think the answer is, because I think he has been hyped as the Prime Minister who won the war. And I think he does get far too much credit laid on him for that. The other things you mentioned, I did actually deliberately try to avoid, because I thought, one, yes.
Yeah, because you're smarter than that. But this is the kind, I felt it was worth raising, because it's the kind of hysterical stuff you get on Twitter.
But also because nobody is, because I deliberately left out some of the stuff that he's not being rated on. You know, this is the thing for me, is it's a case of his reality versus almost his myth. And I think that you are right. I think in time things will develop more and more, and he will be known more and more. But we've talked about how myths and legends and things develop, and certainly characters in history. I think he will be one of those characters in history, certainly in British history, whose name endures. But in the same way that if I say to somebody Henry VIII, they're going to say, you know, I mean, they're not, because that's not how conversations work. But if I said to someone, you know, first thing about Henry VIII off the top of your head, six wives. First thing about Charles I, probably civil war or beheaded. First thing about Winston Churchill, won the Second World War. I think that is kind of... But when you go into detail of what he did, I think the next thing would be made some nice speeches. I think that would be the next thing people sort of thought of in terms of the launching of what... It, you know, those words, like you say, he was a great orator. He certainly was somebody that could deliver speeches, even if the... After his first speech, not his first speech, but the very famous Finest Hour speech, a lot of people were questioning whether or not he was drunk during the speech. That's kind of a lot of what was going on after that, and that was a lot of the reviews of that particular speech when it first came out. And nowadays, it's just held up as brilliant. But the thing is, for me, he is not... I'm not saying that there is anything with... him or saying that he was not the right leader or a great leader or any of the pluses that you've given to him, my contention is purely that his legend exceeds even that. That would be my opinion. And I think that you and I are both very cautious about when history becomes legend, and in the same way that certain defeats and certain other things, they get pushed the other way, I think that in this particular case, he is somebody whose legend continues to exceed that. And I think that is part of the reason why some people are looking, digging into his life to try and find things to knock him down, because for some reason people feel the need to do that if there's something that is that strong and that powerful. And that. But I think that is the thing. For me, it is a case of his legend exceeds what he actually was and what he achieved, and we should actually just be trying to almost eradicate the legend and the extra thing and actually just focus on what he as a person was, because I think that's far more interesting, far fairer to him, and just better history. I rest my case.
Oh, look, you know, I'm all about the history. I'm all about the nuance as well. But there are sometimes people that are just sort of loom large in history. It could be Abraham Lincoln. It could be Henry VIII, Julius Caesar, and Churchill's definitely in that area as well. Now, all these people are just men, okay? They all had their flaws. I like the fact that Julius Caesar basically invented the comb over, and you know those laurels that you associate being in his hair. Those had never been put in somebody's hair before. They were generally sort of like hung off either round the neck or on like standards and things like that. But he put them in the hair because he had a widow's peak and he was embarrassed about, you know, him balding. I can relate to that.
Do you know what? I vaguely remember reading about that in a book about the Romans in 100 Facts.
Yeah. Some guy called Jem wrote that, I think. Anyway, but the point is then you then have to start looking at these people and go, did they deliver the goods? And, you know, Churchill did. You know, he was on the, you know, at the very least, he was on the winning side of two world wars. That's an impressive fact. He had a military career. Even as a young man, he led an interesting life. He was a war correspondent in the Spanish-American War. He was captured during the Boer War and actually did made a break from a prison, did a prison break there. His early years are kind of like Biggles' adventures, and his later years are like, if you want to know how to be the great statesman, do that. He fulfills in every area that he was in. Of course, his views were very much of their time. I don't like it when people start saying we won the war, or you know, almost everybody defaulting to like, well, they're no Churchill or they're the new Churchill, as if he was perfect himself, and he wasn't, and he lost that election, although he did come back again. I don't know if people are aware of this, but basically the Prime Minister every other week, I mean, maybe not during coronavirus, but every other week meets the Queen, because it's her government, and they have a completely off-the-record, undocumented meeting, which all the Prime Ministers, no matter which side of the political spectrum, they all appreciate it, because it's a chance to just talk openly and honestly to somebody who's been in this for quite some time. And I always remember Tony Blair saying, goes, what's in every prime minister's mind is the first prime minister she had to deal with was Winston Churchill. You know, and how do we compare to Winston? So, I mean, you know, he's even used as a sort of like a measuring tool by prime ministers after the war. For the record, you know, Queen Elizabeth II, you know, came to power in the 1950s or became queen in the 1950s, and Churchill did briefly come back again. That wasn't a very successful premiership. But, you know, by then he was quite an old man. Even in World War II, he was a relatively old prime minister. Yeah, I think that the more you dig into him, the more there are good stories. But you're quite right in the sense that nobody should be turned into an untouchable legend, because human beings never are untouchable.
And I think at that point in time, we have given him over half an hour on this particular podcast, which means that even by condensed history standards, he is overrated, because we've given him far longer than we would do a single person normally. So at that point in time, we don't finish up these arguments. We let them spill over. But as Jim said,
yes, what do you think?
We want to know what you think, but we want to know what you think in a friendly, fun discussion chat. Argument online. Please don't resort to name calling and silliness, because you know me and Jim will deal with that ourselves off air. Now we finish up, he's about to launch into a tirade at me once we fit. The whole idea of condensed history, Jim, and the reason we like doing these argument episodes is because we want to have the arguments that we can't have on Twitter. I mean, even the thing I said earlier in the episode about New Zealand, that is something I'd actually written out a long reply to one of those particular propaganda pieces on Twitter. And I'm just the sort of person that I write them all out and then I delete them, because I don't want to get involved with all that in the online world, because I know no matter how sensible you are, somebody will turn it around. So, yeah. Please.
Just on that point, you can't have a nuanced conversation on Twitter. There just isn't enough space, or it just turns into a long rambling thing. But a couple of days ago, I actually tried to help a fellow historian. I could see that there was something that they could change that would make a difference. I sort of like complimented them on what they were trying to do, but then pointed out they might want to change, and they got really aggressive with me pretty quickly. And I pointed out to them that I wasn't sort of like trying to be nasty. I mean, maybe they were so inured to the, you know, people shouting on Twitter, they thought I was one of them. But what I found interesting is, even though, you know, they gave me an opportunity to explain myself and I did, they still didn't even apologize. There are more often days than not on Twitter where I'm going, why am I doing this? Because it just, you know, there are lovely bits, but actually I think there are more bad bits on social media as a whole than good bits. And that's where I'll end. So I agree with Greg wholeheartedly on that.
And that is where we're going to end. But what I would like to say is we are very, very lucky, because we have some of the best of social media. I don't know why we really felt the need to say this, because thank you so much for coming along, joining us. We know that sort of some of you are catching up on podcasts, because I'm doing the same at the moment. So thank you so much if you're binge listening, or if you've kept up all the way through everything that's been going on. And welcome if you're a new listener too. We don't always get this preachy and stuff at the end about Twitter. We try and avoid that sort of thing. But thank you so much to all of you who are listening, who are downloading, who are sharing. And please do connect with us. It's at Jim Deducci and at The Last Airship on Twitter if you want to get involved in the conversation with us about this. But for now, thank you very much to my incredibly wonderful and, may I say, not at all overrated co-host, Mr. Jim Deducci.
And can I speak to the finest co-host a man could have, Greg Chapman?
That sounds like it's a bit overrated, to be honest. In the meantime, ladies and gentlemen, please take unbelievably good care of yourselves. Why did I just say ladies and gentlemen like I'm doing a show? I've got confused. But no, seriously, everyone, take unbelievably good care of yourselves and of each other.
Hello, everybody. Well, look, we've just said goodbye, and it turns out I'm back again with a little bit more to say, because at this point in time, the podcast is going to take a little bit of a hiatus for the summer months. With various things going on with the current world situation, it's just necessary for us, and I'll be completely honest with you guys, it's me. Jim would have just kept pushing through. Necessary for me to take a little bit of a break from this podcast. However, we are hoping we will be back up and running again towards the end of September, bigger and better than ever before. Thank you all so much for your continued support of our podcast. Keep on listening. There's a whole back catalogue you can go back and listen to, and we will catch up with you again later in the year. For now, goodbye, and take unbelievably good care of yourselves and of each other.